When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record in my car at the end of my workday, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. So, I'm going to take a gamble and say that all of us listening right now, have seen The Empire Strikes Back. And we're all familiar with the character of Yoda. And, great character. But, Quick little side note on that is that I do think that Star Wars is one of those stories that too many of us, myself included, refer to whenever we talk about good storytelling. It's a good story, but and maybe that's why I find these little tiny needle pin prick size points that I have an issue with, which I've talked about before on the Art and Story podcast, and we'll go into here. But the character of Yoda kind of breaks down for me after The Empire Strikes Back. And I think it's no surprise that he dies in Return of the Jedi, and it doesn't surprise me so much that he wasn't such an interesting character in the new prequels, except for when he had that really awesome fight with the Emperor Palpatine, but that was just more of a sensationalistic thing. But why did that character break down for me? Well, because what started out about the character really worked for me. And just to recap, you know, just for the sake of framing this, for the points I'm about to make, is how does Yoda act when we first meet him? He's this weird little guy who we don't know where he's coming from, and he's acting kind of childish and kind of weird, and he's kind of off-putting. He's kind of like a little bit of a bum, you know, And the whole point of it, as we all know, is that the whole idea is that he is testing Luke Skywalker to test his compassion and his patience. And for leading up to the big reveal, where he says, "I'm Yoda, I'm the big head cheese of all the Jedi," and after that, now he's the guy who doles out fortune cookie style wisdom. And that's when the character breaks down. Like that, in my mind, that's the arc of the character. That's all that's interesting about him, is that moment when he's this kooky little old man who doesn't abide by societal rules. He just starts digging into Luke's boxes and starts playing with his stuff and goofing around and being kind of obnoxious. And then as soon as he drops that facade, suddenly now he's wise old mystic 24/7. He can't go back to what he was in the first place, because he was pretending in the first place. But I think what made that work is it speaks to, I think, kind of a classic idea of the truly wise character, the soulful little one. That's the term I've coined today. I don't know if anybody else said it before, and I'm not going to like take credit of it and put it in like a title page of a book or anything, but just for the purpose of this discussion, I'm going to call it the soulful little one. And in Taoism, there's this, what it reminds me of is a concept out of Taoism where there's a line out of it, and I'm paraphrasing from a translation, so I admit that this may be imprecise language, but it says, you know, the wise man is disinterested, bemused, apart from society. The wise man is content to look foolish, because once you achieve like true wisdom in Eastern philosophies like Buddhism and Taoism and to other degrees like Shintoism and so on, you don't have to play along with society's rules anymore. You realize that the rules are just provisional rules, and when you achieve like this higher wisdom, you can decide very easily which ones work for you and which ones don't, and you can decide very capriciously on the fly. You can decide that I'm going to abide by these ones today and these ones tomorrow, and you know, there's all those Zen koans, those Zen stories of you know, asking the guy if what's the nature of the Buddha, and he puts a shoe in his head and walks away. And it seems like teenager style, kind of like silly nonsense when you read it on the surface. But, you know, the deeper meaning is that it's beyond words and it's beyond conventions. And that's why I think that the Yoda character is so interesting at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back. And then later on, it's kind of like, well, why are we even telling stories about this? Because it's not a surprise to us anymore that this little guy is so powerful, because once that revelation is made, it's done. Now he's stuck being the wise old guy all the time. What's more interesting to me is the kinds of characters that I find in literature who can be both at the same time. And I've got some examples of that that I've been thinking about a lot lately. I'm in the middle of watching the Paddington Bear series from the 1970s. It was 1975, I think. Stop motion animation show. Really interesting visuals, because Paddington is this three-dimensional puppet that moves around in the stop motion world, but all of the backgrounds and characters are cut out of paper. And the supporting characters, like the Browns and Mr. Gruber and Mr. Curry, they're in color, but the backgrounds are all in shades of gray, except for when Paddington has to interact with certain props, like when he's trimming a bush, the bush will actually be three-dimensional. So it's visually very interesting, for one. That's reason enough to check it out. And you can find it for free on jaroo.com, J-A-R-O-O.com. But I went ahead, just based on the ones I saw there, refreshing my memory from my childhood. I went out and got the DVDs. You can get them on the UK Amazon site. I wound up getting a Region 2 DVD and watching that. But there I was watching the first episode. And there was this wonderfully, grippingly sweet moment at the beginning of the Paddington story. And you know, I haven't read the book since I was a kid. So I don't know how absolutely spot on the scene is, but it doesn't matter because it's really good in the TV show. The Browns, in the very first story, are at a subway terminal or something like that, like an underground train station or something, or maybe just a train station. And they're at the Paddington stop. And they see this little bear sitting in his duffel coat on his suitcase. And as they approach the bear, and you could tell they're kind of like the way that the dialogue or text runs is that their pity is elicited because there's this helpless little bear all by himself. But what does Paddington do? He stands up and tips his hat politely and says, "Good afternoon. Can I help you?" That scene grabbed me so hard. Why? Because here is this what appears to be this helpful little bear, or I mean not this helpful little bear. This alone little bear. This little bear who's on his own in London, you know, he looks so helpless, and you know, your pity is elicited because he's like a little teddy bear. You want to pick him up, you want to take care of him, but no, he asks, can he help them? And that line alone suggests that there's this soulful little one has self possession. He knows who he is. He can take care of himself, and he can't, but he can. It's a weird mix. Because then the Browns take him in. The next line is like, well, actually, we were going to ask if we could help you. And so they take him in. And before they go home, they stop at this cafe, and Mr. Brown's having tea with Paddington, and Paddington is eating buns, these sweet buns with cream on them. And he's not even, at least in the cartoon, he's not even sitting in his seat. He's kind of jumping up and down. He sits on the table. He's making a big mess. He gets the cream all over his duffel coat. And there's a line that goes something along the line of Mr. Brown was sitting there pretending that, trying to maintain his composure and pretending that he always has tea with little bears all the time. You know, so already this bear is challenging the conventions of society. He's acting kind of wild, and he's always getting into trouble. And that's what all the stories thereon are about, is Paddington getting into trouble with this kind of innocent wisdom about him. And maybe that's what I'm looking for, is innocent wisdom. So there's even later episodes where he goes on a game show and the guy's asking him all these questions about if you take a plank of wood and you cut it equally, it's an 8-foot plank of wood, you cut it equally into 8 pieces, or you cut it into 1-foot pieces, how many pieces do you get, or something like that. And he says 8, and then the guy says, well, how long would they be? And now I'm messing it up. I don't remember, but in any case, I apologize for that. I should have done my due diligence and researched the episode to get the actual line, or like, you know, do a little bit more post-production and include the clip. But he goes in this game show, and all of the answers are rigged to be one answer, but Paddington, in his innocent wisdom, realizes there's another way of looking at it, and he has an equally truthful answer that answers the question, and so he wins all the prize money. There's the actual TV Guide log line for the episode. But in any case, the key of what makes this character interesting to me and so sweet is that kind of innocent wisdom, where he's wise beyond his years, but he doesn't lose track of that innocence. And so he has that kind of wildness and unpredictability of Yoda when Luke first meets him. But he has all of the useful wisdom of Yoda after he reveals that he's a Jedi Master. But he can be both because of that. Another character that I think of who's a lot like this is Pippi Longstocking. And I've talked at length on the Art and Story podcast how much I love those books. And I know it's a taste thing. Some people don't want to go back and read silly scholastic children's books. But I love Pippi Longstocking for the very same reason. She is, everything about her makes her an outsider. She lives in this ramshackle house, Villa Villacula, and she lives with a monkey and a horse, and she's got super strength. I mean, like, serious super strength, like Popeye-level super strength. And she's got this wild hair, her pigtails stand out straight, and she's got mismatching shoes, and she's always dressed kind of shabbily. And there's all these little mini-adventures she goes on where one of my favorite stories is when she goes to a question-and-answer bee. And the kids at the school are all deathly nervous of the question-and-answer bee because there's this Mrs. Rosenblum is this very harsh old woman who doles out candy and gold pieces to the kids who answer questions right. And if they're wrong, she makes them stand in a line over in this shame line off to the left kind of thing. And Pippi gets really excited about this because she wants to participate in this. She wants to participate in society. But all of her answers, very much like the episode with Paddington on the game show, all of her answers are equally true, but not the answer that Mrs. Rosenblum was looking for. But Pippi's oblivious to this. She thinks that her answers are absolutely right, and according to her, they are. I mean, after she answers each question, like if Peter and Paul have to divide a cake into two-thirds, and one gets one-third, the other gets two-thirds, what... Or rather, like, they cut one-third out of the cake and Paul gets what's left. How much does he get? Or what does he get? And Pippi puts her hands on her side, or hands on her hips very proudly, and says, a tummy ache. And Mrs. Rosenblum says, make a note of that to her assistant, you know, making a note that Pippi gets a bad mark. And Pippi turns and smiles at the person and says, yes, do make a note of that. Make a note of what great answers I'm giving. And she's thrilled about it. She's having a good time answering all these questions. But they're not the questions that Mrs. Rosenblum was looking for, and she being the strict one who adheres to convention and what is expected of others, is displeased. And so Mrs. Rosenblum sends her off to go stand in the dummy line with all the bad kids, and Pippi's actually angry about it. Pippi is frustrated that she answered all the questions right as far as she was concerned. And so she's standing in the line with all the dummies, and then she looks around at all the other kids, and she sees how sad they are because they have to get sent home without gold or chocolates, and they're going to be shamed by their families and everything. And she's filled with pity for her fellow children, and so she holds a question and answer bee herself with questions that the kids can answer. And it's funny the way she does it. And in the end, she doles out gold and chocolates to the kids herself because... If those unfamiliar with the Pippi Longstocking story, she's got like this treasure in her house, so she always has gold coins on her. And so here we have this character again, this character who operates outside of the norms. She's a wild child, she's unpredictable, and she's got her own brand of wisdom, but she still operates within society to the extent that she wants to participate, just like Paddington wants to participate. He goes to London because his Aunt Lucy sent him there to see the world. And so that's my answer for now to point at why the character of Yoda bothers me, because I think too often, and I don't have any examples offhand to point at this, but I think too often we think of that as like, isn't that clever what George Lucas did? And, you know, it's as simple as this misdirection of making you think he's this, but he's really that. But the problem with it is that once he's really that, he always has to be really that, that meaning the wise old guy. And I think a much more charming and kind of timeless character, and in my opinion, a bit of an elevated and wiser character, to go back to that concept of Taoism, is the soulful little one, the innocently wise little one, who can be both wise but also innocent. Innocent of the conventions of society, but wise because they live by their own rules, because they have that kind of bemusement about life. They can teach us a lot more about ourselves because they operate on their own sense of principles, their own center. All this really was just a sort of like a little rumination about characters that interest me. And these are the kind of thoughts that occur to me when I'm building my own characters as I watch and read other pieces of fiction. When something grabs me, I immediately ask why. And that Paddington moment where I was just gripped by the sweetness of that line of, can I help you? And he tips his hat politely. It wasn't enough for me just to go, that was a sweet moment. I had to ask why. And for now, this is my little impromptu essay on the topic. Not the most eloquent essay, but an essay nonetheless. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz of jdroz.com. Jersey on the Twitters, J-E-R-Z-Y, that is. And don't forget to check out the other great shows on Art and Story Supreme, like Kevin Cross's High Adventure Daily, Mark Rudolph's Mark of the Beast, extra shows all over the place, the forum. We great conversation going on there. If you haven't checked it out yet, do so. It's a lot of fun conversation going on there. And lastly, I should say thank you very much for supporting us in this endeavor. I hope it has been you've been finding the content satisfactory. To use the kind of language you'd find in a Paddington Bear episode, do check out Paddington Bear on Jaru.com if you haven't yet. If you're a fan of really sweet and whimsical stories, I think you'll get a kick out of it. And music for this episode was by my brother Elliot Drozd, who eventually I'll convince to get a website, and Tara Platt did the VO, TaraPlatt.com. Thanks, Tara, for the great voiceover. So, okay, I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember...
Helping his dragon friend sure kept He-Man busy today, and Brindle's tests were pretty tough. In one of those tests to prove his courage, he was challenged to a fight, but He-Man wouldn't fight.
The fact is, fighting never proves anything. Trying to find a peaceful way to settle a problem is usually the best way. And if someone calls you a coward or a chicken, don't let it worry you. It often takes more courage not to fight. Until later, bye now.